This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
The new constitution will move forward in theory, but as is often the case, it's very unclear what provisions will be implemented and when.
That's Dr. Andrew Leibovich, a research fellow with the Sahel program at the Klingendael Institute of International Relations in the Netherlands, on the impact of Mali approving a new constitution. Also, the chairperson of Ethiopia's election commission has resigned, and an angry mob in Nigeria killed a Muslim man for alleged blasphemy against the Prophet Muhammad. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Sierra Leone is still counting the ballots from Saturday's general elections amid concerns about whether the process was fair and whether the results could spark violence. I spoke with reporter Eric Kawa by phone from Freetown.
All right, so Carol, as I can tell you, it's actually a time in Sierra Leone where people are constantly listening to radio stations, monitoring media houses, and looking forward to seeing what would be the situation so far. As of today, this morning I was around the central business district where I observed that business was normal. We have shops that were opened, but then following up with sources now, it's showing that some shops are closing immediately after the announcement of 60% of results by the chief electoral commissioner, because there are these kind of fears and the rest of it. So that's what we're following up right now on the ground.
What is the government saying about that female volunteer who was killed over the weekend?
Well, yes, that report was actually sent yesterday when the opposition party office, they actually were surrounded and engulfed by security personnel who were there showing some drone footage. So I haven't still personally come across any statement, let's say, from any government official that is stating what the situation is as of that. But then the situation was very worse yesterday, and reports coming from the party office saying that the woman is confirmed dead. So, of course, there are concerns. And I also spoke to a source in the party office who told me that they are planning arrangements for the funeral of the woman, definitely.
And what about the preliminary results? They were still to be expected to be announced. Is that still happening, do you think, at some point today or this evening?
Well, around 2 p.m. local time here in Sierra Leone, we were at the Election Command Center, where actually some 60% of the results were announced. And with this one, the National Electoral Commissioner says they announced partial presidential election results, for presidential election conducted on the 24th of June. And the results represent 60% of total polling station results processed each district, cleared by the Electoral Commission for Sierra Leone. Quoting directly from the press release, the management systems at the regional tally centers in Freetown, Bow, Kenema, McKinney, and Port Loko. So that they gave those results so far. And out of that, we saw the Sierra Leone People's Party with over 1 million votes as of this result, and the opposition All People's Congress with over 793,000 votes so far as of that result, 60%. And the third one.
Okay, well, thanks, Eric. That is reporter Eric Kawa. He was speaking to me earlier today from Freetown, Sierra Leone. Mali's electoral authority says voters have approved a new constitution. Colonel Assimi Goïta says this puts the country on a path for a transition to a return to a civilian-led government from the military junta. But not everybody is convinced that this change is a path toward democracy and stability. Reporter Alicia Volkman has more from Tunis.
After repeated postponements of the results, Mali's electoral authority announced that the yes campaign for a new constitution won by 97% of those who voted. However, there have been numerous accusations of low voter turnout, with less than 40% of the 8.4 million registered voters turning up to cast their vote. In particular, there was a low voter turnout in the troubled northern regions of Mali. Poll observers had also cited both ballot frauding, with ballot box stuffing, and serious issues with security at polling stations. It is, however, the first step towards a civilian-led government and a different power structure in Mali since the military coup d'etat 2 years ago. Dr. Andrew Lebovich, a research fellow with the Sahel program at the Klingendael Institute of International Relations in the Netherlands, explains what the impacts could be.
The new constitution will move forward in theory, but as is often the case, it's very unclear what provisions will be implemented and when, particularly given that it may take some time for new institutions like the Senate to be established. It's going to be a slow process for any direct institutional impact. That said, clearly, for instance, the armed groups in northern Mali have made clear their disapproval.
As well as the referendum, there have been major changes in terms of Mali's security situation. One was the junta military government's call for the immediate withdrawal of the UN peacekeepers from Mali after its 10-year mission to support security, especially in the north of Mali, which has been blighted by violent campaigns by jihadist-style insurgent groups. The Malian government has been pivoting away from Western support and a greater alliance with Russia. There has been a significant government-approved presence of the Russian mercenary group Wagner, but there is yet to be an understanding of what the potential impact of this weekend's failed putsch by Wagner and Russia could be. But Lebovich says that the impact could be potentially quite dramatic. The main issue now is how Colonel Assimi Goïta and his military junta will facilitate the process of transition from a military rule to a civilian-led democracy. His opponents have doubts if this will be the case.
I think there are some who believe there will be a civilian transition, but in general, I would say many people believe, whether they want this to be the outcome or not, that Assimi Goïta is going to maintain a very, very strong hand throughout, and that either any future transitional government or any future civilian government will be likely under military control or the control of someone close to the junta.
For the moment, the focus is on whether Assimi Goïta will keep his promise to bring about real change. But with the provisions of the new constitution placing greater powers in the hands of the president and with a potentially worsening security situation, doubts remain as to whether Mali's future is stable civilian democracy or once again it will face deepening instability. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Alicia Falkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
Nigeria's State Security Service has warned the public of possible terrorist attacks on houses of worship ahead of the June 29th Islamic celebration of Eid el-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice. The Department of State Services says operations this week against armed men recovered improvised explosive devices, indicating plans to launch attacks before and during festivities. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The security advisory was contained in a statement released by Nigeria's secret police Thursday evening. It's the first such warning by the Department of State Services, or DSS, since Nigerian President Bola Tinubu assumed office in May. The DSS said the warning was based on the intelligence and recovery this week of improvised explosive devices found during counterterrorism operations in the central Kogi and Nasarawa states near the capital. DSS officials said operatives killed a notorious gang leader and arrested a gun dealer during the raids Monday and early Thursday. Secret Police spokesperson Peter Afunanya did not respond to requests for further comments, but retired DSS officer Mike Ejiofor says the threat should be taken seriously.
An advisory, you know, from the State Security Service for people to be on the watch out. And you know, such advices are based on intelligence gathered or available to the service. So it's important that people are conscious of the environment.
The security agency said it will work with the military and police to disrupt the terrorists' plans. Security issues have created major problems for past administrations. Nigeria has been battling an insurgency that has lasted nearly 14 years, along with armed gangs who often kill or kidnap for ransom. Worship centers are often targets of terror attacks. During his inauguration on May 29th, Tinubu promised his government will prioritize restoring security. Monday, the president fired all service chiefs and the head of the police and appointed new ones. Ejiofor says it is a step in the right direction.
To me, it was a very welcome development. Security is paramount, so there's need for them to also meet immediately, start strategizing on the methods of handling the security challenges in the country.
In June 2022, heavily armed men invaded St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Owo, a town in southwest Nigeria, and killed 41 worshippers. Authorities blamed the attack on the Islamic State West Africa province, or ISWAP. A month later, ISWAP claimed responsibility for a massive jailbreak near Abuja that freed hundreds of inmates, including terrorism suspects. Security experts say threats of terror have increased since the incident. Kabir Raji, National Youth Secretary of the Nasrullahi Ilfathi Society of Nigeria, a Muslim prayer group, says the society is already undertaking additional security measures at various mosques.
The meeting is going on. The various zonal security secretaries have been engaged, security checks, inviting the police, the DSS to every worship centers before the heat, during, ensuring proper supervision, proper car parking and all those things. Scanning machines and checks, we all have this in our various locations.
For now, many citizens will be more vigilant as they attend celebrations. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
In Nigeria, police and residents say an angry mob killed a Muslim man yesterday for alleged blasphemy against the Prophet Muhammad. A Sokoto state police spokesperson told the French press agency AFP that Usman Buda, a butcher at the city abattoir, was mobbed and attacked by some Muslim faithfuls. Blasphemy attracts the death penalty under Islamic law or Sharia, which is operational alongside common law in about a dozen predominantly Muslim states in northern Nigeria. Often, the accused are killed by mobs without moving through any legal process. The attackers fled when police arrived. Buddha was rushed to a hospital but was confirmed dead. Police say they are searching for the perpetrators. A fellow butcher said an argument broke out when young beggars came around asking for alms for the sake of Allah and the Prophet. The second butcher said Buddha, a Salafi Muslim, disapproved of children begging and was immediately stoned and beaten to death by his colleagues. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, go to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Burduka Medeska, chairperson of the National Election Board of Ethiopia, has resigned, citing a personal need for long-term rest to, quote, maintain my health, unquote. Burduka announced her resignation on her Facebook page and said it would be effective August 7th. In her remaining time, she said she will complete unfinished tasks and make administrative transitions. The former judge and opposition party leader has been chairperson of the board since 2018. While Medeska cited health reasons for her departure, the board has been in a row with the Tigray People's Liberation Front and recently declined the TPLF's registration as a political party. In May, the World Health Organization certified that the countries of Benin and Mali eliminated trachoma as a public health problem, the fifth and sixth African countries to do so. As VOA's Ken Tharabara reports, while this Carter Center is celebrating the milestone in Mali, its work in eliminating and eradicating trachoma in Ethiopia, Niger, South Sudan, and Sudan continues.
The leading cause of preventable blindness in the world.
The Carter Center was already a decade into its fight against guinea worm globally when former President Jimmy Carter and his global nonprofit took on another neglected tropical disease in the African nation of Mali. Kelly Callahan is the director of the Carter Center's Trachoma Control Program.
25% to 50% of the children between the ages of 1 and 9 in all areas of Mali suffered from the beginning stages of this disease.
It was a statistic, Callahan says, troubled Carter.
The Hilton Foundation asked President Carter and the Carter Center, would we be willing to consider working on sanitation and water to combat this disease called trachoma in Mali and Niger.
The Carter Center set a goal of eliminating the disease in both countries.
Her eyes, no trichiasis.
Trachoma can be transmitted through infected discharge from the eyes and nose.
This disease is preventable. A bacterial infection that stems from access or lack of access to water and sanitation, poor living conditions, socioeconomically stressed populations.
Since 1998, the Carter Center and its partners have funded and staffed programs with host nations to develop strategies that both treat and prevent infections, even during Mali's recent armed conflict. The Carter Center believes its program in Mali has helped avert blindness in more than 5 million people, and the antibiotics used to combat trachoma also help prevent infant mortality.
The elimination of trachoma as a public health problem in Mali is no less than Herculean.
Sadi Moussa, the Carter Center's senior representative in Mali, believes the success of his organization's trachoma program could boost efforts to combat other neglected tropical diseases like guinea worm.
This also will help us, you know, with donors, to show them that we are serious in what we are doing, and we can convince them to get more resources.
While President Carter has retired from public life and is receiving hospice care at his home in Plains, Georgia, Callahan says they keep him up to date on recent developments in Mali.
And we heard that President Carter was just thrilled beyond belief. So we're very excited that he knows.
Callahan says while Mali's elimination milestone is important, the Carter Center's work in Africa is far from over.
We work in 5 countries, including Mali. Those 5 countries have the worst known trachoma in the world.
The World Health Organization says trachoma remains in 23 African countries, and approximately 105 million people on the continent live in areas at high risk for infection. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News.
Some African analysts say the drama that unfolded in Russia this past weekend when Wagner mercenaries advanced on Moscow to apparently attack the city but then turned around can only be good for Ukraine. Darren Taylor has that report.
Observers say the future of the Wagner Group, a key factor in Russian President Vladimir Putin's war on Ukraine, is in the balance following its rebellion against Moscow. There are thousands of Wagner mercenaries in Africa. In some places, they control oil fields and gold and diamond mines and have been important to Putin in exerting influence on the continent. In Johannesburg, Wits University international relations expert Professor Gilbert Kadiagala says Yevgeny Prigozhin's stillborn mutiny has damaged Russia's war effort.
With the Ukrainians beginning, therefore, to remobilize and do a counteroffensive, this is not going to work very well for Russia because it would reveal that there are big, big weaknesses within the Russian military. A very bad sign for Russia if it wants to win that war militarily. Could be a good sign for Ukraine because a weaker Russia militarily would potentially be willing to negotiate a peaceful settlement.
Military expert at South Africa's Stellenbosch University, Abel Esterhazy, says the events in Russia could eventually result in more Wagner members leaving Ukraine for Africa and other places, but only if the Kremlin carries out its threat to punish Wagner, thereby alienating the group even further. Esterhazy is, however, convinced that Prigozhin's aborted assault on Moscow was a ruse designed to pressure the Kremlin into making changes aimed at escalating its war on Ukraine.
I think the most acceptable narrative is perhaps his discomfort with the way in which the generals orchestrated this whole campaign, his discomfort with the distribution of materials, specifically the fact that Wagner did not receive the weapon systems he asked for. And of course, within all of this, he was explicit in blaming the Russian generals for many of the failures on the Russian campaign side. Almost as if he wants to say, if you've left it to me, I would have done a much better job.
Estereza says in Prigozhin's absence from Ukraine, there's now a danger of a real Wagner mutiny because he's become the human face of Russia's war and is very popular among his troops.
In many ways, he's the only person that can be trusted in talking the truth about the Russian military. He presented himself as a leader of men, often photographed with his men in the field, talking to them, being an inspiration to them, visiting the families of the Wagner soldiers who were killed in the conflict. He's very popular within Russia. But I don't think he has launched the whole operation to challenge Putin's power. And I think from the beginning, perhaps, he didn't really want to march to Moscow to challenge Putin's power.
Estereza says Putin's making a clever move by isolating Prigozhin for the time being in Belarus. Any move now to punish the Wagner commander, he believes, could spark a major uprising against Putin himself. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo, war-displaced people are experiencing an alarming humanitarian situation in camps around the city of Goma. They receive almost no assistance, and the organization Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is calling for an international mobilization to help them. Zanab Nete Zaidi has more from Goma.
Afonsine Ndusabe and her five children from Rumangabo in Rutshuru territory have been living in the Kanyaruchinya camp for a year now. They have gotten aid only us. She says they arrived here in July 2022 and a short time later they received assistance. But since then they haven't received any else. To survive, she begs downtown. She says they have been abandoned around here. Placide Birihanze, in her 60s, is in front of his hut, built with torn tarpaulin. He says the situation drives many women to Virunga Park to search for firewood. Placide Birihanze says, as for the tarpaulin over his hut, it was his wife who fled their home with it. Today, the government is not helping them, and it has been almost 5 months since he received any assistance. Fura Sasu, the head of Doctors Without Borders, or MSF in the DRC, says the group has treated more than 2,000 cases of sexual violence since January. He calls for an international effort to respond to the needs in displaced persons' camps. He says most of the women, they treated women, are forced to leave the camp and their families to try to find food or wood outside, putting themselves at risk of sexual violence. He says MSF is urgently calling for greater mobilization and coordination on the part of all actors to set up a response to meet the needs. More than 100 different rebel groups are battling in the eastern DRC, trying to capture resources or territory. More than 600 people have fled rebel attacks in their home communities and are living in improvised camps around the city of Goma. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, please visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Atreus Regis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.